Hey guys, it's Drew, and one of my awesome opportunities and privileges of my life here was to shoot a episode with Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank, and I want you to listen to this podcast as I sit down with Kevin O'Leary, and we talk about the five M's of wealth. We're going to talk about how to the movement of money, and number two, we're going to talk about the motive of money. Check out this awesome interview and conversation with Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank on Money Is Podcast. I want this building to erupt. I want you to see the Steelers won the Super Bowl again. That's how loud. Ladies and gentlemen, can you scream? Can you whistle? Can you wave your phone when Mr. O'Leary comes out here? Privilege, my honor to humbly introduce the shark amongst the sharks, the man, the myth, the legend. You know him as Mr. Wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, let me hear you scream. Hey guys, this is Andrew, and I'm absolutely excited, stunned out of my mind, to talk to an incredible entrepreneur, an incredible leader in the business world, Mr. Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, the one, the only. The man, the myth, the legend.
Thank this you is so him. Much. Great this to is, be here.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm going to start with a couple get to know you questions. I want some of the viewers, the listeners to get to know a little bit behind the scenes on some general questions. And I'll start with some easy ones first. What was your first job and how old were you had that first job?
I was in grade 11 and I got a job at an ice cream parlor. To me, it's a legendary story because it really changed my views about life, and it was my first day on the job. I was an ice cream scooper, and the only reason I took the job is the girl that I was in love with in high school was selling shoes across the mall,
yes,
right outside. And my figuring was, you know, when all the stores closed, there she'd be, and you know, we could go hang out, and it was a great gig for me. And so the first day, it was owned by a woman, and she said to me, "Look, you know, when you're scooping ice cream, you give samplers to people. You take a little wooden spoon, you give them a little bit of the ice cream or the gelato, whatever it is. But if they have gum, they throw it on the floor before they sample."
Right.
So by the end of the day, you've got like hundreds of pieces of gum, and this place had Mexican tile on the floor. And I see Liz across the hall, and she's looking at me, and I'm thinking, if I'm on my knees scraping the floor, this is really bad branding.
Yeah.
So I said, "Look, you hired me as a scooper, not a scraper."
Right.
And I wish I could do that, but I'm not scraping gum off the floor. I'm a scooper. She said, "You're whatever I say you are. I own the store. You're my employee. It's your first day on the job. And you got to do whatever I say."
Mm.
And I said, "Nah, I'm a scooper." She said, "No, you're fired." And I didn't even know what that meant.
Wow.
So I rode home on my bicycle, explained the story to my mother. She said, "Wow. You know, that was a very bad outcome for you. Your first day of work and you got whacked?"
Wow.
And I was humiliated. And then I realized that day, and I owe her so much today, that in life, there's two different kinds of people. There's the people that own the store, and there's the people that scrape the shit off the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to decide which one you are. It doesn't mean bad that you're an employee, but you have to understand where you fit in the pecking order. I don't want to work for anybody. That's what I learned from that day. And today, I owe her everything because I went back years later. I can now afford to bulldoze the entire mall if I
want.
And the only reason that is that she motivated me to realize I am not a good employee.
Yeah.
That I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be the owner of the store. And that's the lesson I tell a lot of people. And we went back to find her. She was gone. The store was gone. But the point is, it's not a bad thing to work for somebody else. But you have to understand both the pros and the cons. You can have a great life. You can have a fantastic family. You can go to every soccer game on the weekends because you're an employee. But if you want to set yourself free, you got to own the ice cream store. That's the lesson.
So your first job, day one, you got a job and were fired on day one.
I have never worked for anybody again.
Wow, that is crazy.
I don't know how to do it. I mean, I don't
want to. From that day forward, you never worked for anybody.
The only body that can fire me is me.
Wow.
And I like
it. Impressive. That's good. I like it. A funny question here. Do you have any hidden talents that no one would know about?
Well, I think there's a big yin and yang between business, which is very binary. It's black and white. Either you make money, you lose it. So it's almost scientific in that nature. But great entrepreneurs embrace the chaos of art. So I'm a chef. I'm a guitarist. I'm a photographer. And I pursue those with a vengeance. I go after all those pursuits. Chef Wonderful is doing very well these days. And I cook up a storm. And I'm, you know, I've got a massive guitar collection. I play as much as I can. I think the arts give you the balance, and you have to pursue whatever your talent is. You know, my son plays guitar better than me, which really pisses me off because I've been doing it for a long time, but he's a natural. So, you know, I just think that the arts give you that release that makes you think in a different way, and the balance is what makes you a great entrepreneur.
Very good. Last simple question here. If they made a movie out of your life, and they probably will, who would you want to play you?
That's a great question. I think there's only one guy that can do it.
One guy.
It's Mr. Wonderful.
Great answer.
I love that guy.
Great answer. Very good. Let me go to this. Before you were on Shark Tank, of course, you were on Canada's Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
Also a highly popular, successful show in Canada. And was there any big difference between entrepreneurs that were coming in between Dragon's Den and Shark Tank, or are they all about the same?
That's a very interesting question, because Dragon's Den is actually on in 34 countries. We called Shark Tank here stateside because Mark Burnett didn't like the kung fu connotation of it, so he renamed it. But the truth is, it's owned by Sony Television. It's on all around the world. And so what I've learned is every year there's hundreds of thousands of presentations of entrepreneurs to prospective sharks or dragons in Brazil, in China, in New Zealand, in Austria, in England, in Canada. And it doesn't matter what language you speak or where you are, they all have the same desire. They want to set themselves free. They want to be successful. So there is no difference. There, no matter what country you're in, you'll find entrepreneurs that want to create a business and set their families free and work hard and understand the challenge of the journey. And in America, it's become a remarkable platform. Even the fastest growing demographic is 9 to 18 year old women. Who knew that would happen?
Right.
Going into its second decade. When I started on Shark Tank, I had hair. It was a long time ago.
Let me ask you this. I've heard you speak before about your growing up with dyslexia.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a lot of famous people that have also had that. Do you feel like that's altered or changed or helped your success in career using that?
Well, I've talked to a lot of mothers and parents of kids with dyslexia, and it affects badly reading and math skills during the testing period.
Mm-hmm.
So it can really hurt you in advancing through the educational system, but it's not a curse. And the way to empower kids that have it is to explain it to them as a superpower, because severely dyslexic kids, and I certainly had a case, we can read a book upside down in a mirror,
right?
Like completely reversed. And that's a superpower as far as I'm concerned. And the way the teachers that taught me to be more, to think about it that way and be assured that I could compete was to say, look, sure, I have dyslexia, but who in this class can do what I can do? In some ways, I'm more advanced.
Sure.
And so it gives you confidence to pursue and get around the problems, because dyslexic people have had great success. The guy that founded JetBlue Airlines, an example, Damon John, who I work with on Shark Tank, we're both dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the end of the day, you have to understand the limitations. And in that case, they're not that bad. It's just a management of how that is. And it affects people in different ways, and it changes as you age. But it doesn't have to hold you back.
Nice, interesting. If I move into what I try to talk about to the class a lot is about the topic of money, of course. And I try as best I can to.
One of my favorite topics.
It's a good topic, and I try to have just what I call an authentic conversation about it, just a real conversation. I normally try to break it down in what I call the five M's. I mean, you have to understand how to make it, how to manage it, how to move it, the metrics of it, and then the mission of it.
Right.
If I could, I'd like to talk to you about two of those. One that I just think you crush all of them, but one when I watch you, I think, man, this guy just totally obsesses over this one, is the movement. The movement of money.
Right.
Meaning, I watch in that show as you constantly are moving money, what I call investing, moving into businesses and so forth inside of it. And there's two types. There's savers and there's investors.
Right.
Any thoughts or opinions on which one, as far as creating wealth, saving, investing, when it comes to moving the money there?
I have a very simple concept of moving money, and it goes like this. You should think of them as soldiers. They are sitting in your castle. You're going to send them out to do battle. They're taking risk. They want to come home. They don't want to die. And you want more of them coming back to the castle than you sent out. You want them to take prisoners.
Great analogy.
More dollars.
Yeah.
And so when you make investments, you have to really decide on what the risk is. The way I look at it is you want to figure out, how do you get it back? You don't make any money till all the soldiers return. You send out 100 soldiers, you got 100 back. Now, if 115 come home, that was a great battle. And so really, investing is about understanding and mitigating risk of returns. That's why I do structures like royalty deals and, you know, venture debt. And every time you sell something, I get a dollar. Because I know that getting it back is the hardest part. And I think my money loves me very much. Every time I send it out, it's hanging on to my shoe saying, Daddy, I don't want to go. Yeah. I don't want to go. I don't like this deal. I said, get out there and fight it out and come back with a few prisoners. That's what I do. And I don't always win. But the point is, the analogy is, you've got to get more back than you take in. Otherwise, long term, you'll fail. Not everything works. But, you know, you got to be honest with it. How do you figure out to get some back? Investing for the long term is great. But in the long run, we're all dead. So you have to actually make some while you're alive. You gotta remember that.
I love the analogy of soldiers there, because there is risk when you invest, of course.
Always risk.
Always risk. You're never gonna get rid of all the risk that's there.
Yeah.
And of course, they all wanna come home and then bring more back with them.
Exactly.
That's the true victory. That's a great analogy.
That is a great analogy.
Great analogy.
Think about when they invest. Venture investing is very risky. You're lucky to get half of them to come home.
Yeah. When I talk about movement, I like to talk about the word precision. And I think that's a word that really defines you. When I watch you, is the precision of all your deals. You're very precise and very detailed, it seems, on a lot of the business that you buy and invest in. If we talk about precision of the market goes up, market goes down. How much of a role does that play in your decision-making process of investing in the market?
Well, you know, I'm always invested in the market, but I have a very simple philosophy. The one free lunch in investing is diversification. So I never let, in a portfolio, any stock or position become more than 5% of my net worth ever. So when you have a great success and stock is going up in value, look at it every 90 days and say, wait a minute, that's more than 5% of my net worth, and you sell it back down to 5%. And the reason you do that is nothing goes up forever. Poo-poo happens in life.
Yeah.
And so you need that diversification. And when you sell the upside past 5%, you sell, you know, gone to 7%, you sell 2%, you reinvest that in other situations. You know, it's very, very, very hard to guess the direction of markets. But long-term, being an investor in the U.S. stock market has worked out for everybody. Except there are periods where there's volatility. So I also say, buy quality balance sheets, companies that have strong cash flow, pay dividends, have return on assets that are increasing. This is really boring stuff. But if you buy quality, in the long run, you'll get the market returns with a lot less risk.
Are you a type of investor that, I know some investors try to play into the market, not just in stock, but also in buying businesses or real estate, where they wait for that crash to come and they try to buy up as much as they can in maybe real estate or the businesses when the market's down. Is that a strategy that you use, think of, or just don't?
No, it's impossible to time the market. It's impossible to wait out the corrections. When they come, take advantage of them, but it is not an investment strategy. It is impossible. You know, you should stay invested all the time. If you're getting older, past 40, you should really covet preservation, not returns. The whole key is to keep what you've made, because the older you get, it's really hard to make it back if you lose it all. So the idea is that you stay in the market. If you're feeling that your risk is going up and you're concerned, just raise some cash. But getting out of the market completely is a fool's game, because you can't time it. And here's the thing about the stock market, people don't realize. In some years, it's 7 trading days that are 100% of the gain of the market. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You get these remarkable days when the market goes up 1,000% or 1,000 points or 500 points or 250 points, and then it does nothing for the next 200 trading days. And if you're not in those days, you get no returns.
Nothing.
So how do you time that? And this is a classic problem. You go back 100 years in the New York Stock Exchange, the S&P 500, you'll find that most of the returns happen in a very compressed period of time. And if you're not there, you don't get any.
Yeah. If I move to the mission of money with you now, getting into what drives Mr. Wonderful? You have all the success, but what is that mission? Is there a cause or something? I know you talk, I've heard you talk a lot about generational wealth and you have 2 children.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on the generational wealth or that drive that gets you up to go to produce? Is there something there?
Well, there's 2 questions there, and I'll answer them in order. So first of all, what drives me is I want to go to bed richer than I woke up every day.
Every day.
Because I'm a capitalist, and I'm not embarrassed to say that.
Right.
I believe in capitalism. I believe in hard work. I believe in making money, and I'm not ashamed of what I have achieved. People that want to work hard should be rewarded for that work. When they solve other people's problems and create great products, that's the essence of the American economy. If you go to work and you create jobs for people, you're doing a great thing. So I'm never going to be embarrassed about that. And people say to me, aren't you ashamed to be a capitalist? I said, no. I wear that on my t-shirt every day.
Right.
I shout that off the top building. I am proud of it. And I'll never be embarrassed to say, I'm all about making money. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, I think entitling children and de-risking them is a sin. Because if they never figure out how to launch or figure it out on their own because you guaranteed them they don't have to work, you curse them. How many rich, screwed up kids do you know that think they never have to work? It's brutal. I'm not doing that with my kids. If I want to give my money to a cat, I will. I haven't decided what I want to do yet. I'm doing a lot of different things with my time. I support a lot of different charities. I don't boast about it. I think my mother taught me the idea of karma. If you've had success, you got to give back, and I do that in many different ways. But I don't entitle my children. No, you don't get my money for free. You're never going to get it. I'll support you from birth to last day of college, and then good luck. My mother said to me, the dead bird under the nest never learned how to fly. And I said, what does that mean, Mom? She said, no more checks for you. You finished college. I've done my work. I paid the whole way through. You go figure it out. And I said, you got to be kidding me. I don't have a job. She said, well, you better get one. And that was the beginning of my journey.
Wow. If I end this with one last question here for you, you see businesses and opportunities pitched to you all the time, constantly. I would assume probably almost daily, just walking around, people hit you with businesses now. But on the Shark Tank, if we just talk about that, because we all see that show, what really makes up when you watch it, or when you're there, what makes up that good deal or bad deal? What are you looking for from that business for you to invest in it? What makes up a good or bad deal?
This may be a very crazy answer, but I've been doing it for so long and I've seen so many pitches. When they come out on that carpet, and usually these pitches last, 50 minutes and they get cut down to 7, but in the beginning, which nobody knows, is that they have to stand there in front of you silent while the cameras, the jib cameras and the guys with the steady cams take those shots and run around them, and they're just sitting there for 3 minutes. In those lights,
sure.
26 cameras, the sharks looking at them, not saying anything.
Sure.
Because the set director's saying, don't say anything. And I can sense their aura.
Mm-hmm.
I know right away,
wow,
win or loser, before they've said a word. I don't know how that happened, but it's happened over time. I know with just the vibe of that person, or usually it's a team, winner, loser.
Wow.
I'm
so many
sorry.
Years watching it.
Yeah, I'm really good at it.
I've always heard that an investor can smell fear.
I don't know if it's fear. It's watching their eyes, watching their body language, watching how they react with each other. Maybe it is fear. It's an alchemy of all of those things.
Sure.
But it's a karma. It's an aura.
Yeah.
And it's a remarkable moment because they've been, they beat out 100,000 people.
Just to get there.
Just to get there. This is their moment. They practiced many times, but it's not the same as when you actually walk out.
Yeah.
And the lights are on and the cameras are on you, and your moment's about to start, and all those people, all the producers, 150 of them in the background, and you're waiting to start your pitch, I know right then,
right then,
the first word is spoken.
Well, that's why you're the shark of the shark, because I've often been told. Kevin, I appreciate your time. I thank you so much for taking the time to be here. I have two things here for you. I got you a little gift, and I'll give it to you here. I searched wide and far to try to find something to get Mr. Wonderful.
Okay.
And it was difficult, so you can tell me if I did good or fail through here.
All right.
But it's a little gift here. You can rip all that off. It's all trash. I'll clean it up.
Check that out. That's really cool. I love it.
So this right here, I heard you're a diehard Patriots fan.
I am.
So that right there is a Super Bowl signed Tom Brady from the Super Bowl of football.
That is cool. Right. How'd you get this?
I had a search a while for. I actually have a friend of mine in New York that owns a shop, and that's where I get all my memorabilia from. And I had him go look for it to get that.
That is the real deal.
I talked to Finnegan here about what you like. So that's the that's actually game used as well in the Super Bowl. That's a game.
You gotta be kidding.
That's a game used ball right there.
The last one?
Mm-hmm. What it says right there, 53?
Wow.
He's 53. They used so many of them in that game right there.
Yeah, that is a big deal.
And it's signed by the man himself, Tom Brady. So that, I'll get that shipped for you. You don't have to carry
it. No way. I'm keeping this puppy. This is
you
not
take
leaving
it
my
can,
side. I'm taking it now, buddy.
You can. That's right. And I got
shipping this anywhere.
One thing for me, if you can. Every time I sit down and have a conversation about money with somebody, I make this little sign right here. And I hang these on my wall. And this is yours right here. Money is.
Yeah.
And I like to put one word right there.
It's very simple. There is only one word that can go there.
One word.
Money is freedom.
Freedom?
That's it.
Let me write
it
in there.
That's what it is. That's what it is. That's why we all work so hard. That is what money is.
I'm going to write this here.
It's not about greed. It's about freedom. That's what it's about. You don't work hard for the greed of money. You work hard for freedom. That's the whole deal.
Freedom's your answer.
That's it.
Would you do me one favor and sign it?
I'll do that.
And then take a photo here with me.
You
with
got it.
It.
Wow.
Let me hold the ball for you.
Nope.
Nope. All right.
This ball will never leave my hands. I love this ball. That is so cool.
There you go. I'll take that from
history,
you.
Buddy.
It is. And I appreciate you taking the time to spend this time with me.
I watched this game. I'm going to go watch this game again and watch this ball flying around. Look, you can see it was you.
Yeah, you can see the scratches on it. They use a lot of them to sign them all. But
yeah, but that's very cool.
There's one right there. Adam, you got the photo ready?
Wow. Yeah, sorry. Give me one.
All right.
If you can, just take a photo right here.
That
there you
is
go.
Fantastic.
All right.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Great.
I appreciate it. I'll be able to use this in class and hopefully help me as well.
Don't you think they're going to change the name of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, Patriot Bowl. Every year. That's it. That's fantastic. Yeah.